everybody, and welcome to another True Stories of Tinseltown. Yes, it's true. We have finally finished the Bombshell series, and I want to say thanks to April VVA for being a wonderful co-host for our summer series. It was a lot of fun. But today, I have a very fun guest. His name is Jeff Abraham, and he is the co-author of a new book with Bert Kearns titled The Show Won't Go On: The Most Shocking, Bizarre, and Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage. Hubba, hubba. Well, hello there, Jeffrey. Jeff, how are you?
Hello, Grace. How are you?
I am just fine. Pleasure. I know we've been back and forth emailing for a while, and now we are finally doing the show, and I'm glad. It's really, I enjoyed your book. You sent it to me, and it is very unique book, and you get some great reviews. You sent me some wonderful reviews you got, and they're well-deserved. Why don't you tell everybody, why in the world did you choose this subject? I mean, that's a very, you know, kind of like not expected subject.
Well, I have to give credit to Donald Trump.
Well, he's the best, and he's the greatest. I'm sure he did give you that idea.
Well, and let me say why. A little more than 15 years ago, I went to see an Elvis tribute show out in Coachella near Palm Springs at Trump 29 Casino. That was at one time, you know, run by Donald Trump or owned by Donald Trump. And part of the show was in this man who you don't know his name, but you know the voice. Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has left the building. Thank you and good night. A man named Al Devoren. And after the show, Al was in the lobby mulling around, talking with fans. And one of the last things he said, someone had asked him, Al, when are you going to write a book? You've done it all. He said, yeah, I know. I have time. And we said goodnight to him at 10:30 Saturday night. And Sunday morning, after his breakfast, he was killed in a car accident.
Oh, my God. Holy exactly. Heartbreak. I have time.
I had this the same reaction, and it really takes you back. And I was really, you know, kind of shattered. And I thought about, you know, people's last performances, you know, and, you know, Elvis had died with his backpack ready to go on a tour. Hank Williams died coming back from a show on New Year's Eve. And I knew about certain performers who had died literally on stage. And I thought that could be an interesting thing. Not so much about death, just the curiosity of certain shows that couldn't be completed or had, you know, and you always hear people say, oh, I should have gone to that person's concert. He died like 2 days later and I missed it, you know? So I came up, which I don't want to brag, with a great title, The Show Won't Go On. And like everybody in this town, you know, that, you know, I have a screenplay, I have a, you know, I want to do this.
Yeah.
I have a novel.
Yes.
And Bert Kearns, who was a dear friend of mine, said, shut up or put up, let's write this book. And because of him, we now have the book that you're holding in your hand, The Show Won't Go On.
And it's fabulous. And it's about so many different types of performers who have died. And you list them all, you know, you kind of put comics in one thing, opera singers, the Flying Willendas have their own chapter. It's very, very good book, very easy read. And it, in a lot of ways, it was very sad. And a lot of ways it was sad. And would you want to die on stage? Because you asked that question, you know.
I've been asked that question. You know, and I gave an old cliche line, I'd rather die of old age. And that's how, it depends on who you ask, you know, Albert Brooks's father.
I love that. Oh, I love that story, but it was an awful story. I want to say. Okay,
well, it depends.
It was a wonderfully awful story. How's that?
I'm going to answer your question by kind of telling this story. Albert Brooks's father and his brother, we all know, is Super Dave, who we just lost, Bob Einstein, was a radio comic who worked with Eddie Cantor, and he worked with a Greek dialect. He was named Park Yerkarkis. And in the later part of his life, he was not in good health, but he was starting to bounce back and was very popular at Friars functions. And there was a Friars testimonial dinner for Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. And he was a performer. And that night, he was on fire.
He killed.
Exactly. To use his show business expression, he killed. At the end of his performance, Art Linkletter said, "I don't know why this man is not working more often." And almost on cue, his head fell into the lap of Milton Berle, who was sitting next to him, and he expired.
Wow.
Now, yeah, I mean, it takes your breath away. Now, if you ask Albert Brooks, he would say, "Isn't that wonderful? My father didn't die on the way to the show. He didn't die in the middle of his performance. He waited until he got his final laugh, took a bow, and said goodnight."
Yes, he also got standing ovations, right? So he actually saw the people appreciating him and him getting that wonderful. Yeah, if he had to die, you know, what a way to go in that respect.
Right. And
yes, and
the audio can be without doing a terrible plug, can be heard on our website, theshowwon'tgoon.com. But if you ask his brother, he will say to you, "What did your mom do for a living? Oh, was she a housewife? What if we came over to her while she was making eggs and hit her over the head with a frying pan and killed her? Would you say she died doing what she loved?"
Well, I bet she didn't. She's a housewife. I bet she wanted to be like
those are the two sides of the coin.
Right. I agree. So he didn't think that was the way to go. His brother.
Right. And Carl Willenda, who you mentioned, he was part of the philosophy. Really, it's almost the opposite of our title, "The Show Must Go On." You know, the Flying Willendas had so much tragedy, members of their family dying doing, you know, the human pyramid. And he always said, "I would rather die on the wire than in bed." And Nick Willenda, his grandson, who's breaking Guinness Book of World Records, who we interviewed for the book, he said, you know, he would rather die in bed with his grandchildren around him. So again, there's different philosophies about that.
I asked someone who performs, and he said, "I'm dead. Who cares?" At that point, you know, I'm dead. But for me, I too would rather be in bed surrounded by people who love me. I don't want to just like croak in the middle of a stage and somebody saying, "Is there a doctor?" or somebody thinking,
"Right.
Who?" Weren't there people who actually, when someone died, people demanded their money back?
Oh, that happened with Dick Shawn and other places. People, yeah, were monsters. Yeah, it's happened on more than a couple of occasions. And also, I will tell you, if you are going to die on stage, it's not good to be a comedian because everyone always thinks it's part of the act.
Yes.
And it takes part of a moment for people to realize what had happened. And they go, when Dick Shawn had collapsed on stage, people were yelling, "Take his wallet."
Yeah, I loved Dick Shawn. You want to tell everybody who he is?
Yeah, you know, Dick Shawn was in two of the greatest comedies, The Producers.
Yes.
And, you know, where he played LSD. And then he's in Mad World. "I'm coming for you, Mama." You know, he was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Springtime for Hitler. He's like the groovy peace man out, flower
Absolutely.
Child. I loved him. I thought he was hysterical. Funny.
He was a very avant-garde, crazy stand-up comedian. He could do everything. He was not a traditional monologist.
No.
So he had great success with a one-man show called The World's Second Greatest Entertainer. And he was getting ready to do a new incarnation of that down in San Diego. And at one point, well, I should preface it by saying the opening of the show, he would be lying on the stage under newspapers. And he would just pop up. So it was a very unpredictable type show.
Yeah.
So at one point in the show, he says, "Imagine an atomic blast had gone off, goes off, and everyone is killed except for everyone in this theater, and I am your leader." And on cue, he says, "Follow me." And he fell down onto the stage. And obviously people go, "Well, what a great setup for a punchline," right?
Yeah.
But his son, who was the stage manager, Adam, who we interviewed, who was backstage, you know, he goes, "My dad normally doesn't fall in the show at that point." And that's also a pretty bad fall. And he was in the back of the house. He said to his stage manager, "Go out and check on him." He goes, and the guy who goes out there, he goes, and Adam goes on the headset, "Is he breathing?" He goes, "I don't know." What do you mean you don't know? And Adam ran back from backstage onto the theater, and he had stopped breathing. And luckily, the hospital, the theater was on the campus, and there was a hospital nearby. So there were a number of doctors in the audience, and his cousin, who was in the theater, was a leading heart specialist, and unfortunately, he had died of a heart attack right there on stage.
How old was Dick?
You know, that's the ironic thing. The L.A. Times made him out to be 4 years younger than he actually was. He got the last laugh, but he wasn't that old, and there's another example. You ask Adam, he says, isn't it wonderful your dad died doing what he loved, the old cliche? And he said, well, I guess so, but if it was up to me, my dad wasn't done performing. He had another 20-plus years in him. He could have kept on going.
Yeah. So, I felt very sad when I heard that about his death. I really, because I liked him so much, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, he dies on stage. What a way to go. But, there were some pretty interesting deaths. We want to go with one.
But you make a good point. We wanted people... rather than making this just a list of raw facts of this person died and this person died, when we were pitching this, an agent said to me, this is the worst mystery novel I've ever read because everybody dies on the first chapter of every, the first page of every chapter. So we really, even though the word death is in the title, this is really about a celebration of lives. And we didn't want these people to be reduced to as just a footnote. Oh, Dick Shawn. Oh, yeah. Didn't he die on stage? Didn't that person die on stage? No, these people had amazing careers.
He was so funny. Yes, they did. And
right. And regardless, even if you didn't know who the orchestra conductor was or the woman who played the cello, the double bass in the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, we wanted you to care. So when that last moment came, you were touched by it. We had every intention to present sincere biographies of these people and never to be snarky about
you
these
were
people.
Not snarky in the least, not in the
some
least.
Some of them are ironic.
Yes, some of the things that they said.
What they were doing. Yep. Like the wonderful Jane Little, who was literally lived up to her name. She was about 4'11" and played the double stand-up bass, which was bigger than her. And she was battling health problems, but she knew if she came back, she could have the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest tenure in a symphony orchestra. And unfortunately, she died during the encore of the symphony. And the song she was playing, There's No Business Like Show Business.
Did she make the Guinness Book of World Records?
She did. She was in the, she did.
Poor girl.
If you wrote that in a book, in a movie, in a screenplay, they would tell you to cut that out. It's too contrived and hokey. But it was true.
There was so much that is, it's like you can't believe some of these things that these people said. Like the guy on the DeKavitz show,
He didn't say that. His name was J.I. Rodale. And as Dick Cavett has said, the gods must have been very good to me because they gave me a health/longevity expert. Who better to die on television than that kind of than that type of person? And, that episode has never aired. And it's probably the most famous TV episode. And no one has ever seen it unless you were in the studio audience that night. A dear friend of mine works with Dick Cavett, and he said to us, "If you sell this book, I will allow you to watch this episode." So we are the first civilian slash.
Wow.
You can literally almost count on one hand the number of people who have seen this episode, and it was always thought that when he had done his segment, he had moved over from his chair to the next chair, and Pete Hamill, the journalist, was there, and there was a snoring sound, and it was always said that Dick Cavett had said to him, "Oh, am I boring you?" Which was never said.
Yeah.
And it was always thought he had said, "Oh, if I could live to 100, boom, he died." Well, that did not happen. He had been quoted in a New York Times Sunday Magazine section story 3 days before his appearance, said about longevity. So there is a possibility of people living to 100, and so that was so we were able to correct a lot of urban legends. But at one point, he was a very funny gentleman, and he says, "Oh, I don't want to use all my material up. I hope to be back And Dick Cavett says, "Oh, don't worry, you'll be back." And then, like, moments later, he was not back.
Yeah. So you saw it, and it was like, what did he die of? A heart attack? He was this really big.
He had a heart attack. You know.
Creepy.
And this is where as we're taping this, a gentleman named Marshall Efron, who was on PBS, just died, and he was also a guest on the Dick Cavett Show that day, and he had a weird theory that Rodale believed in like pre-electric shock therapy, and Efron had this weird theory that the lights were zapping the electrical neutrons from his body, and a wacky theory. So Marshall Efron, who just died literally 2 days ago, makes a cameo appearance in our book, as he was there the night Rodale died.
That's sad to me, though. I get it, but like you said, the family members, and it's so funny how Albert Brooks thinks, wow, what a way to go, and then his brother, wow. I want to talk about this, a couple of these other guys that aren't as well known. The guy who had catalepsy, yeah. Washington Irving Bishop.
Bishop. That was amazing. Yeah, he had a disease that would put you in a catatonic state, and he kept a note in his pocket, and he was performing and then collapsed. And when they took, and he was kind of like the Kreskin of his day. And when he was taken to the hospital, they wanted to examine him, and they figured maybe we can examine his brain.
Yes.
So when his wife went to see her husband and collect him, she found out they had already done an autopsy on him. And there was a major lawsuit and the whole big thing.
The doctor claimed he didn't see a note. And more so, catalepsy knocks you out, and it gives all the symptoms of death. What's it, the burial, the premature burial? If you've ever seen Edgar Allan Poe's Premature Burial or something like that, that's what it is. And it's terrifying. I've seen it in movies. Can you imagine having that condition? And the doctor said he did not see the note. And boom.
Absolutely. There was a long thing. I think it's even on, you can find it online. She wrote this whole long lawsuit, and there's papers about it. It was amazing. But I think you started to also talk about, you know, the amazing Joe, this escape artist.
Oh, yes. Yes. And amazing Joe example. Burris. Yeah.
Right. And we talked to his son. And, you know, who was there the night his father was buried alive. And, you know, so many people try to outdo Houdini.
Yes.
And you know, if Houdini wore three handcuffs, they were going to do seven. If Houdini was suspended, you know, up in the 10 feet in the air from a straitjacket, they were going to be 100 feet. And if Houdini was buried alive under dirt, they were going to add cement. And Joe, the amazing Joe, his son really was flattered that we were paying tribute to his father, he'd be remembered, you know, that somebody cares and gave a wonderful, you know, portrait of his father.
But can you read?
No.
How he was upping Houdini, what he did.
Well, you know, Houdini, you know, it's funny, I'm going to jump slightly ahead. You know, we interviewed Penn and Teller, who do a bullet catch, and they said, we perform with the same philosophy Houdini did. We don't do anything more dangerous than sitting in this chair. And even though Houdini was risking his life, there really were some tricks involved, and he really wasn't, the things were not as dangerous as the audience thought they were. You know, it is theatrics.
Right.
But at one point, and I'm jumping, but it will lead up to it. You know, there was a famous magician who we'll talk about, and many magicians have been killed doing the bullet catch. And Houdini thought about doing this as a tribute to one of these fallen magicians. And he was talked out of it. And someone said, you know, it's too risky. We don't want to lose Houdini. So he never performed it. He realized that's too dangerous. And he had attempted a buried alive trick once or twice and realized it was too dangerous and really took it out of his repertoire. But performers had known about this and said, let me try this. So the Amazing Joe said, rather than being buried, he was buried in a plexiglass casket, and then he was going to have dirt on, put on him, and then, you know, put in a, he's in a grave with dirt thrown on the casket, and then on to make it more dramatic, he thought he would have a little cement. And next thing you know, there were tons of cement falling on it, and then you hear the crack of the casket, and he was instantly killed, you know?
Isn't that horrible? Wouldn't he have, like, demonstrated on, wouldn't you have tried to demonstrate it on a cactus, on a casket, you know, before you did that, you know?
You're absolutely right. You know, Jerry Seinfeld used to do a routine about a bullet, guys who used to catch bullets, and he goes, all right, now this one's going to be coming a little bit faster, you know? And some of these things, you're right, they should be worked out, but I think a lot of people, they don't realize it, you know?
He was crazy. You know, how do you not realize?
Well, it is foolishly tragically, you know, it's foolishly tragic.
And his kid was there, right? Weren't his kids there? Jeez.
Absolutely, yeah. Joe Jr. was there.
That's so sad. And, you know, I just can't even fathom being buried alive is just one of the most horrible things you can even imagine. And awful, terrible. Anyway, why don't you tell everybody about the magicians and the bullet catch? Because why don't you explain to them? They don't really know what that means.
Well, going back to like the 1600s, magicians have been trying to catch, who've claimed they can catch a bullet from a rifle or a pistol being fired at them. And I will tell you, Grace, since you're such a good friend, how it's done.
Oh, goody. I won't tell anybody.
It's a trick.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, back in the old days, some people were using real bullets. And, a bullet was supposed to go in one end of the chamber, and then a blank would come out of the other chamber. But because of certain mishaps, a real bullet came out, and it has been known to kill many magicians over hundreds of years. As recently as 10 years ago, we lost somebody doing the bullet catch. But one of the most famous was a gentleman named Chung Ling Su, who was one of the great Oriental magicians of his time, mm-hmm. died in 1918. He was a big star of vaudeville. And while he was performing, there were two gunmen who were standing ready to shoot.
Yeah.
He was going to catch bullets, and he had been doing this for 10 years. It got to the point where it wasn't even the big finish in his act. He had been doing it for 10 years. And he was going to not catch. Some magicians said, I can catch it in my teeth. He was going to kind of catch it on a tray and kind of scoop it up. And what happened was the bullets wound up hitting him in the chest, and he collapsed onto the stage. And for the first time, Chung Ling Su uttered words in English. I think I've been shot.
Wow.
The audience was entirely aghast. Not that he had been shot, that Chung Ling Su spoke English.
That's terrible.
Poor
Chung
Ling.
It
was not known that he had been living, not living a lie, he had been pretending to be a magician from the Orient, but he was actually named William Robinson from New York.
I love it.
You know, that was any elementary magic student would know the history of Chung Ling Su and know he was not Oriental. But because the book was written for lay people and not magicians,
right?
We wanted to give that as an extra kicker rather than saying, oh, Chung Ling Su, born William Robinson, you know, died, you know what I mean? But by giving the extra kicker, you know, it really had more of an impact for the lay people.
It's amazing. And another one, everybody knows this performer, Tiny Tim.
Tiny Tim was a unique performer. You know, 50 years ago, he was married on the Tonight Show, had one of the greatest ratings at the time. Someone just told me a great story. People were scared of him. He was very bizarre. He was on the Hollywood Palace with with Bing Crosby, and he came up to Mr. Crosby, and he like, and Bing was like, you know, get this guy away from me. But when he asked, and when he said, I want to ask you about a song you recorded in 1933, and Bing was like, all right, this guy, okay, he's for real. He really does love this music. But he was a very bizarre performer, and in his later years was not in the best health, and he had collapsed, and he had a heart attack.
How old was Tiny?
Tiny was 64 years old and was not really in the best of health. Prior to his demise, he had a heart attack a few months earlier, and the doctor said he really should take about a year off and recoup and relax. But unfortunately, a lot of performers need money. They have that show business in their blood. The show must always go on. And he was in Minneapolis and was asked to perform at a woman's auxiliary club. Not exactly a great glamorous place to end your
croak,
career.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was performing at the end of his performance, almost on cue. He played his trademark song, Tiptoe Through the Tulips, started to walk off stage, and collapsed.
Oh, so he did finish
song. He did finish his performance.
Tiptoes Through the Tulips is a classic. And I will put it on with this show so you guys can hear Tiny singing. You know, I have a friend who met Tiny, Tim, who is not Tiny, by the way. He's a big guy. He was like 6 foot three or something. And he was shy. She met him. She was a comic and they met. They were performing at some club together. And he can't like look you in the eye. The fluttering of the eyelashes is totally for real. You know how he used to do that all the time, fluttering his eyelashes? Because he was shy. And he really did talk like that. And he was, got to give him credit, you know. He got himself out there. We remember
his singing voice was his singing voice. Definitely was real. He didn't put that on for effect. However, I mean, we've heard some interviews recently on YouTube, and I mean, the voice is a little deeper and things like that. But he was a shy man. He would always say, you know, talk to people. Oh, Mr. Crosby, you know, Miss Sue.
Wasn't she
like
Miss
that.
Vicky? Or was Miss Sue his last wife, right?
Miss Sue was his last wife. Miss Vicky was the one he married on The Tonight Show. So it was always that kind of way. He was that kind of person.
And that was legit, that he wasn't just some thing saying that I'm going to call my wife Miss Sue.
No, that's the way he kind of spoke.
Huh. Well, he was a character, and there will only be one Tiny Tim, that is for sure. And when I heard that's the way he went out, I was like, oh, I'm sorry for Tiny Tim that he's dead, but... Yeah, what are you going to say? I think Jeff and I, and we talked beforehand, and they're going to have a sequel out, which I can't wait, and they're going to put it out next Halloween, and this is definitely fitting for my October spooktacular show. And so they're going to come back on when they do their next book. And it will be the spooktacular, I'm sure. It sounds very spooktacular. But I think to finish us off with this wonderful, horrible subject. It's hard to say, you know what I mean? How do you say it? It's interesting. It's interesting. Okay, we're gonna go out on top with those Flying Melendas.
You know, the book is called The Show Won't Go On, but really they were the opposite. For them, the show must go on, for especially circus performers. The Flying Melendas was various members of the family. And in the early 60s, they would do something known as the human pyramid, which, where members were stacked one on top of the other.
Yeah.
In the early 60s, two members fell to their death. One was paralyzed. And the following year,
That 1 year in that pyramid?
Yeah. And they came back, and the tragedy is, it's amazing.
No, they didn't have any nets?
No, they didn't, and sometimes, even a net is not really the end-all safety.
It's not fail-safe. It doesn't mean that you're going to live,
It's funny, the people who would be shot out of a cannon in the circus?
Yes, they're crazy people,
Usually, they were not being shot out of a cannon with gunpowder. That would be crazy.
Yes.
It was really air pressure shooting them out. And they died landing on the net, breaking their neck.
Ah.
They didn't die from the gunpowder, which there was none.
How would they break their neck on the thing? Because they wouldn't be above
just by the way they landing.
Yeah.
So it was really flying through the air was the easy part. It was the landing was the difficult part.
Okay, so let's get back to the Walendas, and thank you for that.
So
breaking the net tidbit on the people who get shot out of cannons. I love that. So, I didn't know that fact.
No matter how much tragedy this family had, they kept on going. You know, and when we interviewed the grandson, Nick Walenda, our first question was, at what point does the family say, we're out of the, you know, the flying trapeze business and the tightrope business. We're done.
We're going to open a pizza parlor chain
right.
or something. Yeah.
No, they had it in their blood.
Meatballs, yeah.
They had it in their blood for years.
Yeah.
So the patriarch was Nick's grandfather, Carl Walenda, and he was 69 years old, and he was still breaking Guinness Book of World Records. You know, the last
he was still doing all that junk at 69?
Yeah. So he was performing at a circus in Puerto Rico, and part of a publicity stunt, he was going to walk across two buildings.
Oh, God.
125 feet.
Oh, Lord.
And that day, the wind was a little stronger than they had thought.
Oh, yeah, he has to hold that thingy, right? That balance
The balance thing. But there are ways for when the wind comes, there are ways for them to, you know, stay on the wire and keep their grip. Mm-hmm. But he was a little bit older. You know, maybe his reflexes weren't that good. And we interviewed the photographer who was there that day. And not only did we realize that this photographer took the photos that we needed for the book, but he was an eyewitness. You know, you don't realize it. We'll just talk to we'll get the photographer and we'll get his photos for the book. And we realized, no, he was there and he was an eyewitness. And when he showed somebody the photos, they said, the face he's making, it looks like he was having a heart attack.
But he could have been having a heart attack and then going, holy crap, I'm going down. Yeah.
So he's there, you know, with a motor drive, taking these amazing photos.
Oh, my God. I couldn't look at them.
And then the next day, he's at the newspaper, you know, with the photos. And the editor of the newspaper says, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be at the circus. The Walendas are going on. He goes, what? He goes, yeah, the daughter and some of the other family members are still performing. Show must go on for the Walendas.
Maybe they were doing it as a tribute to him because that was always his thing.
Exactly, to keep the tradition and doing that. And, you know, Nick explained something about the net you mentioned. You know, they realized in the old days people would go to events and said, you know, maybe this will be the day that, you know, so-and-so dies, like the, you know, the stock car races and, you know, to see the crash. But Nick realized that once they put a safety net or an airbag, it had no effect on the audience's appreciation for their skill. So Nick realizes anytime I'm performing with other family members, I will always use an airbag and not to put anyone else's life in jeopardy.
So they're still doing it. Is this what you're saying?
Yeah.
The Walendas are still out there.
Yeah, Nick. A month ago or so, he walked across Times Square.
I don't remember that. I'm in New York. I have no idea.
No, this was...
Wow. How old is Nick?
6 weeks ago. Nick, he must be in his 40s. I know he died. He was born a year and a half after his grandfather. He did not know his patriarch grandfather. And then Carl Walenda's widow and Nick wound up recreating the walk that killed Carl Walenda a number of years later. And they stopped in the spot where
Their
grandfather fell, kissed, and then they traded places and walked.
My God. That's amazing.
It's an amazing tradition of the show won't go the show
must go,
go
on.
On.
Yeah.
And that's what we really wanted to do. It was a celebration of these wonderful performers.
And it is.
Who unfortunately, because of hook or crook, they had an unfortunate demise. But these people really gave us such great entertainment.
There are so many. I can't even tell you. Oh, I just want to, just briefly, we don't have to talk about the conductors, but tell us the most dangerous profession in your book
Now, you would think, you would think lion tamers, stuntmen, the guys shot out of a cannon, the guys doing the riding the motorcycle in the circle of death. You know, we didn't find any people die during the circle of death, but we found more orchestra conductors dying on stage than any other profession.
Unbelievable! How many? Because I can't, I'm trying to count them.
We lost count. I mean, when it's that a was a revelation, and we just because, and there have been studies, just because of their lifestyle, you know, living, you know.
Traveling, you mean? Traveling.
Traveling constantly, you know, living on airplanes. We all know about, you know, the bad circulation, the terrible food, you know, the diet. You know, also these are gentlemen not 20-year-old youngsters.
Right. And they're swinging 50, their arms around 50, all night 80s, long.
And the aerobics and the energy that goes into that, those notes, that turned out to be the most dangerous profession.
I really was shocked when I read that chapter. I was like, wow, who'd have thought?
That was the most shocking. We had no idea. You know, again, when we thought the book, we were going to include stuntmen and this and that, and, you know, and, you know, circus performers and lion tamers. No, but the orchestra conductors kept on showing up over and over again.
Unbelievable. Really. You guys, you are a delight, Jeff. You have been so much fun. And you are so wonderful for my spooktacular October. Ooh, aren't you scared? For this wonderful book. It has gotten great reviews, kids. And I'm going to put his reviews when I post this. And your sequel next year, want to tell everybody what that's going to be about, who you're doing?
The sequel, I think we're still playing with the title. It might be called The Show Can't Go On. It's going to include show business deaths, TV actors, movie actors, stuntmen, even people who died during the making of a movie in the sense that, like John Candy.
Right, and they had to. Oh, yes, and The Show Must Go On. Check out Gene Harlow.
Right. You know, people who were, you know, making a movie and then, you know, went home that night and never came back and died in their sleep.
Sad. Oh, my God. You know, so that'll be great and sad.
And then people like Cary Grant, who was, you know, doing a one-man show in Davenport, Iowa.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, and some good ones.
And one of my favorite stories was Edgar Bergen, who had announced his retirement. And he was going to do a 10-day engagement at Caesar's Palace, co-headlining with Andy Williams. And he was about 3 days into his final week, final performances. And he would end the show with this little curtain call speech. You know, every show must have a beginning and an end. It is now time for me to pack up my little friends and say goodnight to you all. So I thank you all for being a wonderful audience. Good night. And on the third night, after giving that speech, he went to sleep and never woke up.
Wow.
Isn't that a wonderful ending?
He yes, and he was at least home, not in front of the whole wide world. And yes, it's right. A beautiful ending.
Well, he was at Caesar's Palace, and he was in his hotel room, but he did a wonderful performance. And you know what? Maybe he wasn't up to doing another seven, you know?
He probably wasn't. So and, you know, he did it. And you're right. That's a good one. So that's good.
Yeah. So there are very sweet people. But then you can think about the wonderful Cary Grant, the great.
Oh, the way wish I was able to see one of those things, but I was way too young.
Right.
And, oh, my God.
That was the thing going to like the book. It says, oh, my God, I had tickets to see him the following. People would say, oh, you know, I had tickets to see him, you know, the next day or the following week. You know what I mean? Or I was going to get tickets, but I decided not to. But again, you know, is that a glamorous ending? You know, he dies in Davenport, Iowa.
I know. So you guys will. Jeff's going to be back to be continued next
Jeff
October.
Jeff Abraham and Bert Kearns will be back with more stories. The Rodgers and Hammerstein of death will be back.
I love it, and it is a good book. And It's sad, absolutely, but good and interesting and fascinating. And you all will love it. And the name of the book, again, is The Show Won't Go On, The Most Shocking, Bizarre, and Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage. And he co-authors the book with his friend Bert Kearns. And this is Jeff Abraham. And Jeff, you were just a wonderful guest. I really enjoyed you. I had a really great time.
It actually flew by.
It did, and I had so much fun. And you were a great guest, and you know yourself, and you're a lot of fun. And happy Halloween, and good luck with the book. I just think
Thanks
it's
so
fabulous,
much.
And I can't wait to talk to you about your next book. You are wonderful.
You got it. Thanks so much.
And bye, everybody. Hope you enjoyed. Hope you enjoyed the show. Bye, everyone. Take care. Bye.
The Club. With his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is mean. That's entertainment. The lights on the lady in tights, or the bride with the guy on the side, or the ball where she gives him her all. That's entertainment. Be hot, simply teeming with sex. A gay divorcee who is after her ex. It can be Oedipus Rex, where a chap kills his father and costs a lot of bother. The clerk who is thrown out of work by the boss, who is thrown for a loss by the skirt, who is doing him dirt. The world is the stage. The stage is a world of entertainment. Like you see on the screen, a swain getting slain for the love of a queen. Some great Shakespearean scene where a ghost and a prince meet, and everyone ends in mincemeat. The gag may be waving the flag that began with the Mr. Cohan. Hip hooray, the American way. The world is a stage. The stage is a world of entertainment.